Ils étaient des hommes. Jack Olson, Bainbridge Island, Washington, October 1998. Introduction. In the Iron Age of mountaineering, before a new generation of athlete technicians began attacking mountains with space-age equipment and devices that they used as aids in ascending, rather than limiting their hardware to protection and rescue, as the sixth degree climbers of the old school did, every climb of the north face of the Eiger had its own tale of adventure, courage, and hardship. But none was more tragic, more heroic, and more bizarre than the ill-starred assault made in 1957 by as unprepared and unbalanced a four-man rope as one can imagine. The tragedy lay in the fact that three members of the rope died. Much of the heroism was shown by the mixed party of amateur rescuers from six nations who saved the survivor, while, typically, I'm afraid, the professional Swiss guides dallied and dithered and worried about who was going to pay them. What was bizarre about the climb was that 4 years were to pass before the climbing world learned that the assault had been successful. The 13th successful climb. And the Alpine journals were not slow to underline this fateful number to their almost universally superstitious readers. Beginning with a crisply written summary of early assaults on the north wall of the Eiger as a background to the tragic 1957 climb, Jack Olson blends his long experience as a sports journalist with his skills as a best-selling novelist to lend technical accuracy to fascinating characterizations and a taut narrative structure that includes countercutting between the desperate fight for life on the face, the Herculean efforts of the rescuers, and the Greek chorus of the journalists and death tourists watching from the comfortable hotels in the Alpine Valley below. I was delighted to learn that Jack Olson's Climb Up to Hell was going to be reissued, allowing a new generation of readers to thrill to one of the best accounts of true high mountain adventure ever written. Trevanian, author of The Eiger Sanction. For Eula and Trip Child, and my son, Alan. Part 1. The Living. Chapter 1. Fritz von Almen, 39 years old, serious of mien, conservative of dress, walked onto a tiny side porch of his family's hotel, 6,700 feet up in the Swiss Alps, and sat in front of a swivel-mounted pair of binoculars aimed at a towering mountain wall across the meadows. It was late on Sunday morning, August 4th, 1957, and for the second day in a row, the weather favored von Almen's hobby of alp watching. The midsummer sun beat down and encouraged him. He knew that hot days made the chamois wander over to the base of the cliff to bask in the cooler stream of air pouring continually downward. Nature's air conditioning. Von Almen felt optimistic as he swept the twin-barreled 72-power Zeiss telescope across the rock litter at the base of the wall, then slowly worked his field of vision upward across gulch and crevasse, pillar and snowfield. A few hundred yards up, silhouetted against a patch of dirty ink snow, three fine chamois popped into sight. Von Almen watched the nimble miniature antelopes for a few minutes, savoring that quiet satisfaction that comes also to bird watchers and eclipse observers. Now, pleased by this good omen for the day, he stepped back into the hotel and to the daily humdrum of running it, as one member of his family or another had been doing for 117 years. It is a frequently observed phenomenon of happenstance that awful catastrophes often take place in the most breathtaking of settings. In the gentle valleys of Grindelwald and Lauterbrunnen, below Fritz von Almen's hotel, grassy slopes of a rich green hue swept upward, dotted with daisies, buttercups, clover, and fat dandelions until they reached the first patches of snow above, where white crocuses, snowbells, and violets make their appearance. The trees, from valley floor to timberline, run the whole spectrum of greens from near black through lime to a